compared the younger generation of that time, of the pre-war time, perhaps to the hippies of the 60s, at least
well,
in certain respects.
Not completely. One cannot really do that. You see, remember when I speak that this was of a time where everything broke down, you were isolated, and I only could speak of our community around there with the odd individual that may have come from somewhere else or something like that, you see. Because some would come from Alexandrovsk in those days, there was the old colony, around Kortitsa, where I think I detected here while I was here, but I had an inkling of that before, it seems to me subconsciously more or something, from father and so forth. You see, the Kortitsa were the first colonies, and they were under that celebrated dictator, what's his name? They were.
Do you mean the Mennonite leader, the first the first one, Heppner?
No,
not Heppner.
No. This was the
not Mr. Cornies. Johann Cornies.
Yeah. I understand they brought his small what was it, an obelisk or something? Got it out of Russia, you know. I don't know how much it cost them.
Well, I know there was a monument to Mr. Heppner that was taken from Kortitsa Insel to Manitoba. And there is also another monument, but I don't know, that was brought over, but I don't know if that was to Mr. Cornies.
I think it's Cornies, yes. The island, of course, went underwater, and maybe that's when they got it, you see. And that group of people were, socially speaking, the aristocrats, the Mennonites, and so I'm pretty sure of that. You even get that occasionally here, you say, the Kortitsa, something like that. Because they were the pioneers, the first ones. But that was visible, I mean, when I liked that generation, I was part of it, of a complete book. Because everything broke down. The schools broke down, the churches started to not exactly split, but there was no discipline anymore, nowhere at all. The new ideology in preaching the freedom of this, the freedom of that, the freedom of love, for instance. So, you see, that was brought in by the celebrated Kollontai. I wonder whether you ever heard of him.
Never heard.
Well, Kollontai was one of the early revolutionaries of the Lenin clique. I believe she was not Russian, actually, because the name is not Russian.
No.
And she was the great apostle of all freedoms, actually almost anarchy, which of course was anathema as far as the Pashuts were concerned.
Right.
And she was very well educated. Down to her, all these things were prejudices. And that, in those days, of course, was this is now the 20s, the very early 20s. Everything was free. The writers, the painters, there was the great painters. I saw some of his work in Moscow, but one collector, but I'll come to him later. There was Malevich, there was the Levitsky, the Serov, he was not so part of the revolution, and there was all Russian art. Contemporary original art. This, excluding this one, and that one, which is a Russian scene, that was done by a German artist. And this
is a son.
And you did this for me, and you left us something to remember by, because I helped this son to get across from the United, from the Canada into the United States by calling up the embassy. So, but anyway, returning to that, Kalantai preached that, you see.
And was her influence felt in the Mennonite communities?
Not to that high, no. In the younger groups, certainly we knew that it was the speaking of Kalantai, it was accepted, they were the beginning of a Komsomol in Hauptstadt.
Beginning of a what?
Komsomol, the communist league, the young communist league.
Oh, yes.
I don't remember any of the German speakers there, or any of the Mennonites ever joining, with the exception of one, and he did that as joining, I think, in Alexandros, but he came from Hauptstadt. Chap was, his last name was pretty good. But there it was, and there, of course, was all the literature that was printed and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this was all great, you see. And the schools became co-ed. Zentralschule,
mm-hmm.
everything, commercial, everything became co-ed overnight, you see.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly had an influence of the thinking of the young ones, and we ran wild, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So that I don't think that any of them really were young of that age as I would deliberately say that that wasn't felt there. It certainly was felt.
Mm-hmm. So how were these feelings manifested? What sort of things were the young people questioning? What sort of things were they
not so much at home, but the free degree which you enjoyed. There was a lot of dancing going on. Because there was nothing to eat, so you dance.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly you found out that the schools you went to, particularly beginning in its project, the commercial, had two types of libraries. Each school had its library. The one was for the younger ones, the other for the more adult. And in the more adult, there was also a section of books which were taken out of circulation because of censorship. And suddenly all this becomes free.
Mm-hmm.
So you go and read, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Civil War brought in the element of the of soldiers. German soldiers before the German occupation, when they pulled out, a handful of them remained in Russia around there because they joined the band, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Civil War going almost regularly with the seasons here and there, and everything what the army brings went through our town.
Mm-hmm.
And then for a just before we left, actually, we left in 24, and they must have come in there, I think, in 22 or 23. They moved in a mental Hauptstadt, a battalion that was, I think, an NCO school,
mm-hmm.
which took over several homes there and brought in soldiers. They trained and walked on the streets and everything. And for their edification and so forth, there was this old woman coming in,
mm-hmm.
which was quite open, as far as particular to us of that age. You couldn't miss that, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Even to the point that when we, as kids, wanted to go swimming, because this battalion took over the several, by that time, not functioning flour mills, who had these huge cooling basins, which were just like a swimming basin, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And that was used for swimming for the soldiers. And it was always clear water, because we sat on artesian water, you see, in Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many water spouts there were still spouting from the ground. And we were asking permission whether we could go there. understand that we pass an antidote. You see that we are not carrying any venereal disease, you see. So all with all this, you see, and don't forget, you are 14, 15, you're 16, you're 17. So will that not be an impression? It has certainly. And you run around with mostly boys, but also a handful of girls of the same age. Will that not create a certain freedom, which certainly our parents never enjoyed, and used to throw it at our head, so forth and so on. But literally, I think everybody was afraid. They may have been even afraid of us, you see, as we are somewhat afraid of quite a handful of young individuals around here.
Sure, sure.
You see.
So one could almost speak of a generation gap of sorts there.
Oh, clearly, you're quite right, yes, you're quite right, yeah. Quite right. Here, they brought it, I think, they brought it in the better control, the parents put some discipline back. I doubt, I would like to meet two or three of my friends in those days, speak about it, if they succeeded 100%, I don't know. Because you just don't take everything out.
That's right.
You don't throw it out overboard, you see.
Was there any sort of a feeling against the church at all?
Anti-religious propaganda?
I mean, I'm still talking about among the young people.
Well, we certainly weren't highly religious. Group, I can tell you that. There were always the ones that would say that this and so forth. Oh, well, the answers would be very rapid because you know that they couldn't do it. But I've never known anybody that would say that I don't believe or so I know anymore. But certainly, church attendance dropped to zero as far as the school was concerned.
Really?
Because up to then, we in school, as we went to school, you see. We have to be in the church every Sunday, I think I mentioned
as
that.
As a school, yes. Yeah.
Now, after 17 and 18, there was still a little bit of that, but even at 18, during the German occupation, these things began to fall away. And then, when it was communist of our completely, that was gone. And I have trouble thinking back just exactly how did it happen? It just seems to have happened. That was all it seemed. You see, during the war years, of course, the anti-German propaganda was terrific in the colonies by the Russians. The churches were not permitted to continue the complete services in German. That was taken away. The service eliminated the so-called sermon. You could pray, you could sing, and you could read a few paragraphs from the Bible. We were told as kids, don't speak Russian on the, don't speak German on the street, which we usually completely but then you see, we didn't have any military in our districts in the war years. But these things came in, and this was out. No more German anyway. There used to be before that the occasional amateur performances, which were in German. Or in Russian, or I think I even saw one, I forgot to look in Hungarian. Now that all disappeared. And I would say the society, per se, became frightened. More so than we, who were children. Because I remember. his brother came rushing into the house and saying, Jim, we have no more desire. We have no desire any longer. He's gone. He's gone. We have no more. Mother telling him, shut up, get in the house, and don't you dare to say a word. Yet, even as young as I was then, you see, we could hear what was talked about in the house and around, that things were collapsing. The war was going very badly. The political situation in Petersburg had allowed Tsar to spare. The name of Rasputin was, I've heard that, must have been 2-3 years before the Tsar actually abdicated. So these things were already freely talked about, mm-hmm. by at least free enough for us to catch up and ask mm-hmm. questions, you see. And the Russian papers, despite the censorship in those days, were compared to the present-day Russian paper, I would say, absolutely radical, although yet they were considered as being very, very conservative. Because father subscribed to the, I think, 2 Russian newspapers that I know since I came here, that they were definitely on the conservative side. Mm-hmm. Because the society we were directing to the Mennonites and around there, because we also were right next to Lutheran and settlements and Catholics, they were all decidedly. Mm-hmm.
Right, sure. I was going to ask you also about anti-Semitism among the Mennonites.
Yes.
I know that the Jews were very much disliked in Russia.
Yes.
I wonder if that was the case among the Mennonites
also.
There was also.
Anti-Semitism, but it was, let me say, a subtle anti-Semitism. Certainly, I was never told when I would bring school friends who were Jewish.
Yes, you were saying, as far as your school friends were concerned, you didn't make any differentiation.
Nothing at all. That wouldn't. I was told by parents that you shouldn't be Jewish. When I say subdued, it was there because you had a small group of them, and strangely, as I mentioned before, they all seemed to have been tailors, so this is what I knew.
Yeah.
Or in the trade, our best tinsmith, which we had in Hauptstadt, was a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
And the dentist was Jewish. And the next larger settlement, which was Russian, I would say a settlement, probably the size of Greenwich or something. That's where they had the larger stores where you would go to buy one choice of dry goods, which you wouldn't have around our place. So there were small stores we had them as well.
Mm-hmm.
There was a cooperative, but there were at least 2 Mennonite stores. But for such things, you went to that settlement there and to buy hats for women or something like that. Now, this was another thing which
mm-hmm.
was very clearly noticeable in Hauptstadt, but not in, if you would go to a smaller, like Egan Hag and the papers and so forth and so on, stylishly dressed.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have seamstresses, which were very busily clothing or sewing dresses for our wealthier Mennonites,
mm-hmm.
like the Willems, who had a large factory, Franz Schrader's factories, and the women was dressed with large heads, with everything like that, were certainly upsetting to a settlement 6-7 miles away from us,
right,
you see,
right.
where the things were still very simple, but we were not a farmer's community.
Right. There were no
yeah. keep that in mind.
Right.
And after 1905, when they had that, 4 and 5, when they had that incipient revolution, some of our landlords that had these large estates around there in the Crimea, etc., who have suffered, some of whom were beaten up, really, you know, their health and so forth, a number of them moved their permanent residences into larger settlements. I have quite a handful. And this architect, Johann Peters, he designed and built a handful of these homes for them, which were startlingly different, completely different from the old style, flat and long and so forth. That was gone. 2-story high, balconies, at least 6-7 rooms more than before. And they would be sitting behind high wrought iron fences. That was all coming in. And sometimes the fantasy ran to the ridiculous.